From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
For the first time in 20 years, Western Australia could really matter to the outcome of a federal election. Some four Liberal seats are in play in the state. And for the first time in a federal poll, we saw a leaders' debate held in Perth. Today we have William Bow, who runs the Poll Bludger website, to talk to us about the state of politics in WA and about the individual seats. William Bow, if I could start with last night's debate. Did the fact that the two leaders agreed to have the first ever debate in Perth reflect the importance of Western Australia in this election?
Yes, I think it probably did, because Western Australia is the state where there is the most slack to be taken up from Labor's perspective. Labor improved their position in 2016. They went into that election with 3 seats out of 15 and came out with 5 out of 16. But they're still coming off a miserably low base in Western Australia. And I think there's a feeling that there's a Labor resurgence going on in WA. They had a massive landslide victory in the state election here in early 2017. And the turn in the economy here, I think, has done a lot to change sentiment. So there is a sense that there is a very great deal to play for in Western Australia, that there could be a very solid swing on which could take with it a really sizable number of seats. And I think Western Australia is the one seat other than Victoria about which that can fairly clearly be said. So the government are, you know, putting up a very determined rearguard action in Western Australia, and correspondingly, Labor see a big opportunity here.
Both sides have announced large infrastructure packages in the lead up to the election. Indeed, the government this week brought forward the construction of some naval ships. Is infrastructure a big issue there?
I think the naval ships issue probably reflects a need to sort of patch up sentiment about the submarines project all being allocated to Adelaide. There was a sense of grievance in relation to that in Western Australia and constituencies that the government might have lost support from there. During the mining boom in Western Australia, there was a very dramatic population explosion and perhaps a sense that infrastructure failed to keep up with that. On the other hand, though, we are now at the we've experienced a very sharp downturn in the wake of the mining boom, and that population growth has stagnated. So I think there might be a sense in Western Australia that a little bit more action was required on that front a little bit earlier. But certainly in Western Australia, I think there's a sort of perpetual sense in Western Australia that we are regarded as a little bit too easy to ignore by Canberra. And the government, I think, has been, you know, looking around at areas where, you know, particularly in marginal seats on the fringes of the city, where there is a feeling that infrastructure hasn't kept up.
Now, you speak about the aftermath of the mining boom. Where is the state economy up to now, and issues like housing prices, for example?
Well, it's continuing to flounder, and for quite a long time now, the housing market has been expected to turn. It keeps not happening. The latest data on housing prices for the last quarter, which came out the other day, was very grim, or almost as big a downturn as Sydney. And this after a long period of downturn. The downturn is not in the housing market in particular, is not a recent phenomenon like it is in Sydney and Melbourne. It's been playing out over a sustained period. And I think there's a growing sense in Western Australia that the light at the end of the tunnel ought to have arrived by now and hasn't. We're seeing that reflected in the unemployment rate as well. Western Australia used to lead the country for low unemployment. It's now pretty much the opposite end of the scale. And yes, as I say, a sense that prosperity has been lost. And that sense of downward mobility in Western Australia, I think, is very dangerous for the government. Western Australia may not be, you know, poor in absolute terms, but I think it's the direction that things appear to be headed in that's important in terms of electoral behaviour, and that's one of the reasons why the government's very concerned about the state.
So do you think the Scott Morrison line that the Coalition are better at handling economic management will resonate in your state?
I think it is always the case that the Liberal Party have a brand advantage in terms of economic management, and that is the issue that they are always trying to prime and, you know, make voters prioritise. It's a question of how much of an advantage that is, And I think at this election, it's not the advantage that it was. I don't think there is the feeling that, you know, Labor are necessarily going to ruin the economy any worse than the Liberal Party did, particularly after the dramatic defeat of the Barnett Liberal government in Western Australia 2 years ago. It went out of office with a very poor record in terms of budgetary management in the economy. And I think that did a lot to degrade the Liberal brand in terms of economic management in Western Australia. And also, the fact that economic fortunes have declined have meant that economic management is going to be evaluated differently. I think back in the sort of 2000s, Western Australians were happy to judge the Howard government favourably because interest rates were low and tax cuts were coming through. Now I think that people are more of a sense that the government doesn't do enough to sustain the people who are disadvantaged. I think that the factors that people use to assess how the government is affecting their daily lives have moved onto terrain that's more favourable to Labor.
So packages like childcare, dental health for pensioners, education spending, they're likely to go over well, you think?
Yeah, I think that the issue is that because Western Australians are not feeling as prosperous, they are more receptive to a Labor message. I think if Labor had been sort of making these sorts of promises when Western Australia was booming, they'd be more worried about the effect on the amount of tax they were paying. But now, yes, the provision of services by the government are going to be received more favourably than it would have. And this is sort of part of the improved atmosphere for Labor in Western Australia.
Now, what about the GST? Is that now done and dusted after the government made some changes?
Yeah, I do think that is the one positive, clear positive in the picture over the last 2 years, is that I think that they have largely negated that issue. It's still a sore point in Western Australia, but it is now a sort of bipartisan sore point. I don't think there is as clear a sense as there was that the government ought to do something about it. The buck stops with the incumbent, and therefore the protest vote against over GST revenue was going to be singularly and forcefully directed at the Liberal Party. Maybe it will contribute to, you know, the sort of sentiment that drives the minor party vote. You know, the Clive Palmer Party might do well, One Nation might do well, but I think that for a while that was playing out unambiguously as a negative for the Liberal Party. And now they've got a response to those sorts of questions, which invariably come up in interviews with journalists in Western Australia. They have got a story to tell. And as I say, in terms of the two-party contest, I think that issue has been largely negated.
And what about views about the state government? They had that big win. What are people's feelings about them now? And is that playing at all into the federal contest?
Yeah, I think the state government is out of its honeymoon phase, but nor is it experiencing a dramatic backlash. Mark McGowan is still a broadly popular figure, and you only need to look at the complexion of the Labor Party federal campaign in WA to appreciate this. They are more keen to have Mark McGowan's image around the place than Bill Shorten's. And I think that, you know, broadly speaking, the government haven't had any big, you know, while the economy may not have turned around, there haven't been any major political disasters for the government in Western Australia. They have an appealing leader and a number of appealing figures, I think, at the sort of frontier of the state government. And I think that that has been valuable for the Labor brand, and it has given Western Australians a sense that a Labor government is not something to be feared, not something that will be as sort of shambolic and chaotic as they would have been imagining when their most recent experience of a Labor government was Rudd and Gillard.
Now, can we turn to the individual seats? Can you take us through what, in your view, are the most vulnerable coalition seats?
Well, based in terms of the margins, I think the two that I think are probably most likely to go are Swan and Hasluck. Swan is being contested for Labor by Hannah Beasley, the daughter of the former opposition leader. So they have, a very appealing and high-profile candidate there. Swan was always traditionally a marginal seat, but the Liberal Party have now held it since 2007. And that's, the broader story of Western Australia there. The sort of seats that we're discussing here are seats which were traditionally bellwether sorts of seats that went with the government of the day. But given that ascendancy that the Liberals have established in Western Australia since the early 2000s, they've been, you know, looking, if not secure, then they've been held by the Liberals for quite some time. So I think Swan is probably would be the first to go. The second would be Hasluck, which is out in the eastern suburbs of Perth. It's a relatively new electorate. It doesn't have that long a history, but it is a classic marginal seat. It sort of combines a few areas that are stronger for Liberal with a few areas that are stronger for Labor. But again, it is one of those seats that the Liberals have kept winning as they have maintained their ascendancy in WA. The other, I think that the two big prizes for Labor in Western Australia would be Pearce. It is Christian Porter's seat, the Attorney General. There are some who suggest he's the future Prime Minister. And he holds a quite difficult electorate, which is out on the fringes of Perth. It is where the downturn in Perth, in Western Australia's economic fortune, has been experienced most sharply. And it is full of those kind of young mortgage-paying voters who are not rusted on in their political loyalties. So when there is a swing on, that is exactly the sort of electorate that swings big. Labor has never won the seat before. It's changed a lot over time, but it would be a big prize both for that reason and for taking out Christian Porter.
Porter is spending a lot there, though, isn't he? Will this make a difference?
Well, it can't do them any harm. And, you know, as I say, it is because it is the kind of electorate that doesn't have people with strong political loyalties. It's an electorate where you can get a bang for your buck if you do have a well-oiled campaign. There was a poll out a week or two ago which showed that it was line ball. So there is everything to play for in Pearce. It's certainly not the case that Christian Porter has gone for all money, but he has a fight on his hands, and that's not something that the Liberals are accustomed to in that electorate. I think the fourth plausible potential gain for Labor is Stirling. Stirling has a solid Liberal Party margin on paper of 6-7%, but a lot of that is the personal vote of Michael Keenan, who is retiring after 15 years as member. So you have a popular Liberal member who spent a long time building up his personal vote. Now that he's out of the picture, I think Stirling is going to resume what was long historic place as a very marginal seat. It changed hands a lot, very frequently, until Michael Keenan won it for the Liberals in 2004. So I think that seat's going to revert the type, and the swing there will be sort of above the weight, and it'll be a question of whether the Liberals can hang in there.
Just before we move off the Liberal seats, I wonder, is Julie Bishop doing much in this campaign, or has she disappeared from view now she's retired or retiring?
Well, I think it would have been helpful for the Liberal Party if she had in Western Australia, because I think this is an important factor in Western Australia that we haven't mentioned yet, is that she was a face of the Liberal Party government and a Western Australian face of it, and a very popular one. And I think it was damaging to the Liberal Party that she had as little success as she did when the leadership transition happened. There was a sense, I think, among a lot of people that the Liberal Party betrayed her, and it gave an impression of disunity within the Liberal Party that she was unable to gain any traction with her election bid, and there was clearly a lot of bad blood between her and her other colleagues in Western Australia. So in answer to your question, though, no, Julie Bishop has not been a feature of the campaign trail, and I think that represent her disaffection, and that's another of the quite large number of negatives that the Liberal Party have to overcome here.
And of course, Matthias Cormann, another big name in the WA Party, really came out of the leadership affair somewhat damaged. He backed Dutton. He was really an instrumental factor in Malcolm Turnbull's downfall. Has he been seen a lot, or is he also just not in evidence?
I wouldn't say that he's been in hiding. I think Matthias Cormann is still quite a popular figure in Western Australia. There wasn't that aversion to Peter Dutton in Western Australia that it certainly seems to be the case in Victoria. So while that was damaging to his prestige, I wouldn't go so far as to suggest that he's any sort of liability for the government. The fact that he's in the Senate means that he's not so much at the coalface of campaigning. I think he's more of a national figure, perhaps, than a state one. I think when you've got a lower house electorate, it gives you a stronger identity with the area that you're from, the state that you're from, and being in the Senate, sort of, as I say, makes him seem more of a national figure to Western Australians than a local one. But nonetheless, as far as it goes, he is pretty well regarded, I think, among Western Australian voters. And, yeah, he he's been earning his pay in the election campaign, I think.
Now, turning to the other side, a poll last month showed Bill Shorten was particularly unpopular in Cowan, which is held by Labor's Anne Alley, by only 0.7%. How much will this affect the outcome? There's been some chatter about Cowan. Do you think that it is in any real danger?
I would be very surprised if it is. I think, probably the Liberal attitude is that, it's worth putting a bit of effort in there in case something shows up. I think the broader point, though, is that Cowan is classic middle suburbia. It's sort of 20 minutes drive up north of the city in sort of a mix of suburbs that are both very new and more established. But because it is so identifiably suburban in its character, I think this is where Bill Shorten doesn't play terribly well, especially in Western Australia, that he's sort of seen as a big city sort of figure, whereas Scott Morrison, if nothing else, I think is very effective in portraying that, normal Aussie suburban dad image. And I think voters in Western Australia, a lot of them are contrasting those two images and finding Scott Morrison more to their liking. The point I would make about Bill Shorten's popularity is, or lack of popularity, is that all of this was true in 2016 as well. He, all of that image problem that I think he had in Western Australia, nothing's changed since then. The difference is, though, that I think he's got the opponent that he has. Scott Morrison is a... That image of, him being suburban is not an image that Malcolm Turnbull had. And in an electorate like Cowan, that is one thing that I think the Liberal Party can... compare the situation to 2016 and say that things have improved since then. They've got a leader who I think goes down better in an electorate like Cowan. There might be other electorates around the place where Malcolm Turnbull was preferred, but I think Cowan is the sort of electorate where Scott Morrison is.
So do you think it's significant that the audience of undecideds at the debate gave it to Shorten, where some commentators, of course, marked it more evenly or even gave it to Scott Morrison, but the locals seemed to warm to Shorten on the night?
Well, the difficulty there is that there were so few people in that audience. A lot has been said about the fact that that audience gave it to Shorten, but when you're dealing with 48 people, that can just be a sort of random artefact. But on the other hand, the sense that you got among people there was that they responded well to Shorten's lines and Shorten's message. I think he may not be as appealing a political personality as Scott Morrison is, but when he talking about those sorts of issues relating to the economic strain that families are under. In Western Australia, I think a lot of people got out of their debt at the peak of their boom, attached themselves to mortgages that they're now struggling with. And when Bill Shorten is reeling off lines that take advantage of this fact, I do think the feeling in the room was that there was an enthusiastic and positive response to what he was saying. And for all that, I think Scott Morrison put on probably the slicker performance out of the two. When you actually boiled it down to the standard messaging, the sense I get is the terrain of this election is more favourable to Labor.
Now, just let's finish off with the minor parties. What impact do you think Clive Palmer's preferences will have, and what about One Nation?
I'm a little bit sceptical that Clive Palmer's preferences are quite as big a factor as a lot of people are saying they are. I do not think his voters are going to be all that directable. I think that most of his voters aren't going to follow the how-to-vote card, probably aren't even going to see the how-to-vote card, because Palmer doesn't have the infrastructure of volunteers to, get that happening on election day. And the experience from 2013 is that his preferences divide pretty evenly between Labor and Liberal, regardless of what the How to Vote card is saying. And One Nation, Western Australia is traditionally their second best state after Queensland, but they had a very rough campaign at the state election, and the polling shows that they never completely recovered their image in Western Australia as a result of that. They did a preference deal with the Liberal Party, and I think that's a great cautionary tale about preference deals. They can yield you a tactical advantage in terms of people filling out how to vote cards, sending you votes, but they also tie you to the person that you have done the deal with, and that's usually politically disadvantageous. So I think there's a risk there for the Liberal Party in relation to the Clive Palmer preference deal, not just in Western Australia, but generally. Nonetheless, I think there is a big constituency in Western Australia that will be looking to vote for a none of the above option. As I say, the sense of economic downturn in Western Australia has been damaging to the Liberal Party. There is still a sense in Western Australia, however, that Labor aren't completely to be trusted on the economic management front. And I think that notwithstanding that people may not regard Clive Palmer or Pauline Hanson all that favourably, I think a lot of people are that alienated with the system that they're not going to let that stop them, and that they see these candidates as conduits for a general sense of complete disaffection with the whole system and a rejection of the whole thing. I think that's going to be a factor to extend around the country, but I think given the economic circumstances in Western Australia, I think more so here than most places.
William Bowe, thank you very much for your insights into the West. And that's all for our election podcast for today. We'll have another one for you very soon. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Burlage. Goodbye for now.
And if you're itching for more election analysis, check out The Conversation's other podcast, Trust Me, I'm an Expert. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to Politics with Michelle Grattan right now. Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.